You guys are
good. Can you hear me?
Make sure
am I on?
Coming on.
I am on. Good job. Hey, everybody. Welcome to family night, family game night. We are so excited. Just again, I said this morning, probably too many times, but we are so excited to be with you guys. We have heard stories about this church family. We love Rob and Annie. We love their family, and we love so many of you. So thank you for inviting us into your home, your church family. We have loved it. And what makes it so special is that this is our 1 year anniversary today. Yes. I know. I told the women this, but at midnight, I turned to him and I said, Babe, we made it. I know it's a year, but it's a huge celebration for us. We're excited, but we're thankful to be here. We're like, we're not normal people. Why would we go out to dinner for our anniversary? But we are going out to dinner with you guys. We get to do ministry and be a part of your church family this weekend. But in honor, and I hate that you are eating, because I'm about to tell you a story that hopefully it won't hurt your appetite. Kind of in honor of family game night, I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you a very meaningful, impactful story about me and Cam and the moment that he fell in love. But first, I would love to show you a picture of our beautiful family and our totally normal kids. That is, they're twins, Joa and Sayla. Yeah, and Cam, in that moment, it was before we were married, he didn't know what he was getting into, but Joe and Sayla are six, they'll be seven next month, but they are with grandparents in Texas right now, but just so you can kind of put faces, because we're going to be talking about them tonight, but just to tell you a little bit more about us, Cam is a pastor in Fort Worth, Texas. He's an associate pastor, and I am a counselor for a ministry organization called Care for Pastors, and we do counseling for pastoral families, and I'm sure he'll share more about the church and what we do with ministry, but a little bit about us, but going back to the amazing, meaningful story about when Kim knew he fell in love with me. Our story is kind of not normal, and you will kind of hear that throughout us sharing tonight, but this kind of can express how not normal it is, and I was back in the dating area. Dating when you're older is really weird, but met Cam, we got serious, and I had my two beautiful children, and I was like, okay, we can do this. We can start dating. I can start dating again. I can bring this guy into our home and into our life, and we're getting really serious. And we're sitting on the couch one day, and I have, guys. Like, I know he is in this for the long haul, okay? And so I'm like, okay, maybe it's time for our first kiss. Maybe it's time. And so we're sitting there, and we're watching Home Improvement.
I have a small, ridiculous addiction to Home Improvement. I have watched
so
it over
romantic.
And over.
It's so romantic.
But it's so good.
It's so romantic. But I knew. So anyway, he leans in. This is how I remember it. He leans in to give me a kiss. And I'm like, oh, first kiss vibes. This is it. He's the one. I love him. And this is what I'm thinking in my mind. And all of a sudden, I see past him, my daughter comes out of the room. And she is covered in poop. That's why I'm sorry already.
So much
poop. And my eyes got big. And he's like, what is it? And I was like, so much poop. And so I ran and I grabbed her and I tried to hide her from him. Because I'm like, he loves me. He's gonna love me. I know this. I grab her and I mean, the bathroom's covered. She thinks she can clean it up herself. It's everywhere. They're five at the time. It's just a disaster. And so I'm trying to hide it from him, but I'm running by him with my little girl covered in poop. I'm running by him, and I go to the bathroom to try to put her in the bathtub. And all of a sudden, the biggest spider comes out. And we scream. And so he finally is like, jumps up, goes and kills the spider. I'm trying to clean up the bathroom. I'm like, stay with my daughter covered in poop. But let's get back to what we were doing earlier. But it's just... And I knew then. I was like, he's over it. this guy's not gonna, even though we've been dating well, he is not gonna come back. I know he's not. That was horrible. But yeah, he came back.
Yeah,
nice. He came back. And I think it actually, he found it endearing. He was like, oh, this
As I walked into the bathroom, Sayla's in there and just floating in the bathtub going, yeah, I was like, all right.
He's like, I'm in this. So we were discussing, we're like, should we tell the story? Should we not tell the story? Definitely tell the story. But I think it's a good gateway to say, this is our life. It is messy. And I could have planned that perfectly, and we could have had this perfect, like, story. But honestly, I wouldn't have it any other way looking back. In the time, I wanted to go run away and hide. And I was so embarrassed. But I was like, you know what? This is real life. And I actually, we kind of love it because it did bring us closer. And at the time, even though it scared me to death that he wouldn't come back, it actually drew us closer. And so tonight we're going to talk about those messy stories we want to avoid. And that's just kind of an opening to that.
That'll be the last reference to poop. So we're going to move on from that.
Sorry.
That was not my last experience with poop. But yeah, that is the last reference. So yeah. And sometimes I think it's fun as we kind of go back into the mind of a child and get to experience those moments. And for me, that's been a gift because I didn't know where God was leading me. I was, you know, 34 at the time when we met. And, well, I was 33. And then slowly we got married. But two kids wasn't necessarily the plan,
right?
And but it was wild where early on, as I was a youth and I was going on a mission trip, we ended up at a church, and at that church they were having an adoption Sunday. And it's one of those moments where for some reason it just clicked in my head as a kid. I think I was 12, and it was like, that's awesome. And they connected it to Ephesians, you know, we're adopted. And this idea of the binding agreement that cannot be broken. And it was like something like that. And then it kind of became a moot point for a while until God decided to bring it back into the story. And I think one of my favorite stories briefly to share is a couple weeks ago, we got to go skiing with the kids. And that's something for me was really a connection piece with my parents growing up. And we're from Texas, Fort Worth. There's not a lot of mountain going on out there. So there was something about getting out to the mountains, which just makes this even more special with you guys as we show up. So we left 85 degrees, all right? And we don't miss it, all right? So this is fantastic. Every time the wind blows, I'm like, so cold and so good, you know? So, but we took the kids out there for the first time to go skiing, and we're like, we'll see how this goes. Because, as we, you know, you see that beautiful little angel, Sayla. We call Sayla Angel Baby, because you see, she does this all the time. Every time she goes to bed, her supposed to do this, you know, heart thing, and I can't figure it out. I just kiss her in her sleep. But there's a lot going on behind those bangs. And she was not having it on that ski slope. When we go down, and I just remember just the chaos of trying to teach her how to ski and thinking, here it is. This is that moment as a dad where it's like, I'm going to teach my child how to ski. And really all we did was sit around and eat Lifesavers halfway down the mountain with her crying. That was basically, I'm like, just eat another one. Just stop crying, you know? And so we handed them off to ski school, and then they learned. And I'm like, okay. That's what you do. You outsource parenting. This is how it works. I can do this. And so, but it also brought me back to just this beautiful memory in my own mind of when I went skiing with my dad and my mom, and we snuck away for a day. So my dad did not care about skiing, but he also enjoyed getting up in the mountains. And we went on one of those snowmobile tours. And as we pulled in, it was a group tour, and there was this gentleman who was standing there who was a mountain. I mean, this guy had to have been 6'5", 6'6", just a huge lumberjack type. And he had his little boy with him who had to be 3 years old. And as we're walking out to our snowmobiles, there had been so much snow in Colorado at this time that, I mean, we are trucking through. And I just saw this beautiful picture in front of me of this massive man taking steps through the snow. His footprint just huge. And his son with both feet jumping from footprint to footprint to footprint. And the idea of, wow, like paving the path for the next generation and how important those footprints are and how dangerous they can be. And how God is saying, follow me. And Paul says, follow my examples. I follow the example of Christ, and how hard that is. And how so much of our story is not of taking the right steps, right? Y'all don't get a chance to, I mean, y'all see us up on the stage, but let's be honest, behind the veil, it ain't pretty. And there's a lot too many steps that should have led me somewhere far away from someone like Chrissy. The greatest gift God decided. But for me, it was messy. That what I saw on Selah, I'd been wearing on my face for a lot of years from mistakes I've made, and yet God's grace was sufficient. His purpose was clear, and his hope was always there. And it was something that I felt, and I saw, and I knew. And that's that passage out of 2 Corinthians 12 where it talks about we have weakness, but perhaps we can see that as a backdrop for God to do his greatest work. Don't run from our weakness. Give it to God. And so as I think about these stories, there's one that really comes to mind that I think we all know. It's those stories that stick from when you're a kid, right? Who's here heard of a Humpty Dumpty? Yeah, Humpty Dumpty. What was up with that dude? So you might know what you can say with me. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. But all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again.
We all know
the story. But have you really thought about how ridiculous that story is? Okay, Humpty Dumpty, my understanding, was an egg. What was he doing on a wall? Humpty! More like Humpty Dumpty, right? And how many of us have pulled a Humpty? Anybody pulled a Humpty in here? Yeah, yeah, you keep eating. It's all right. I'm judging you. All right, so, yeah, we pulled some Humpties. What was he doing there? And that's so many of our stories, I think, are because we're in places we never should have been. And so it results in brokenness that should have never happened. But God sees it and God knows. Our problem is this. We think that, like the king, we can solve it. If I just pull enough resources around me, if I just go to Barnes & Noble's and find that self-help book, that's going to do it. If I just listen to that one more podcast, that one more YouTube, that's going to fix it. That's going to take all those pieces that are laying on the ground and somehow put it back together again. And we're like, no, okay, maybe I need to get some other people around me, some other voices, some other men. Maybe I need to get some horses because that's worked, you know? And it communicates the ridiculousness of the pursuit and the lengths that we will go to fix what is broken within us. But we all know the end of the story. This is not a happy children's story, okay? Poor Humpty. He's still laying there. And the horses went home. And the men went home. And they moved on. The hope of the church is that we bring the broken and we lay it at the feet of Jesus and we trust that that can be the backdrop of his greatest work. What if we can put aside the pride that keeps us from bringing that to Jesus and put aside what we consider worldly wisdom to be the solution for a spiritual problem? This story that we have right here is not a story of figuring it out. It is a story of brokenness. And Chrissy has some pretty tough stuff she's been through. And I have some stuff that has led me to where I'm at. But this is where we want to start in this whole point, is that there is a story that God's writing And it doesn't end with the broken. It uses the broken. But one day, it will be all restored. We have a hope. We're those kind of people. And so that's where Chris and I can come together and go, we ain't got this. But we know Jesus. And so Chris, I wanted to share maybe first a little bit of her story.
And I just want to add, you know, we talk about our brokenness, and like Humpty Dumpty, it was, he shouldn't have been there. He fell because he was in a place he should have never been. But I also want to acknowledge that sometimes our brokenness is a result of other people's actions or something that's around us. It's not always something we do, but something we can't control, and it just happens. And that's the sin in the world, and that's painful. When you're like, God, I didn't do anything to get here. Why is this happening to me? And that's tough, because that is the suffering we really don't understand. We understand the consequence of our actions and our sin sometimes, and why we suffer through that. Sometimes we don't understand when the world's just full of it, full of pain, because sin came into the world. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. Because I think sometimes when things happen to us, we think over and over, what did I do, God? What did I do wrong? And we try to figure it out, and we can't. And then we think, I'm not good enough for God, or something's wrong with me. And sometimes it's just because of sin in the world, and you didn't do it. And that's hard to understand. And it's a little bit a part of my story. And that's a battle I had in my story. Is it my fault, or is it just a result of there's messy in this world that hurts and stinks and it's yucky. And today I shared a little bit about my story, so I may share a couple of things again. But I'll tell you now, as we talk about the theme that God writes our story, I was writing, I was thinking, and I thought, this is not the story I wanted to write. So as I share this with you, it's not the story I wanted. It's not the story I thought I would have as a little girl, or the one I dreamed of, or the one my parents said, you know, I could have. I just, you know, if I dreamed big enough. And as Rob had said, this is our book. I think it's a pretty good book. But I actually want to read you just a very short part, and it's the beginning of my story that's actually in this book. And I tell you, I read it here earlier, and it broke my heart again. Because even though things happen in the past, it doesn't mean they don't affect our present. But I want to read this to you. It's called His Story, Her Story, Our Story, Telling the Story of Depression on Behalf of Those Who Never Got the Chance to. And I said, as a young girl, I dreamed. I danced around the church where my dad pastored as if I hadn't a care in the world. It was my safe place, my home away from home. Never did I see my future and think of a day when life would beat me down, when I would feel hopeless, defenseless, and abandoned. Looking back, I miss that little girl. I miss her dreams. I miss her illuminating smile as she saw the future with such goodness and hope. And this is her story. It's a story of real life. It's a story of love, of heartache, and of brokenness. It's also a story of forgiveness, second and third, and I'll add a fourth and fifth, chances, of hope, of promises, and of redemption. And reading this after 3 years, we wrote this, and reading this now still affects me because I remember that little girl who didn't understand when suffering came into the world. And I'll tell you, I did grow up as a pastor's kid. My dad was a pastor. I had a wonderful family, wonderful upbringing, probably a little naive because I thought I could conquer the world. And I didn't think anything would touch me. And I knew that God wanted me to be in ministry somehow. And I went to seminary to study to be a counselor. I'd known that is what God's calling on my life was to, I said, I knew what it was like to hurt, and I knew what it was like to heal, and I wanted to be a part of God's work in that. So I went to seminary, and that is where I met Eric. And Eric was my first husband. And we were early 20s, we were young, we had hopes and dreams. He grew up here in upstate New York, and he was in seminary to be a pastor. And when we met, it was pretty instant. We just fell in love. We knew that we wanted to serve God together. We went immediately into church ministry and just created our life. We wrote our story, the story we wanted, the story God, we thought God wanted for us. And we did ministry with all our heart, and we loved and we served people. But what happened is that sin in this world still exists. And suffering, we know, is inevitable. And unfortunately, church ministry is hard. I'm going to be honest with you guys. It's not easy. We are still people, pastors, and our families, we're still people, right? And we deal with things. And something that my husband battled for a long time was depression and anxiety. And he was able to hide it behind his smile, behind his jokes. He was able to hide it for such a long time. And I didn't know how deep it really got. But in church ministry, I slowly saw him fading. I slowly saw that the depression became worse. I saw that he had no one to talk to. Because what pastor struggles with depression, right? Years ago, this was the case. We didn't talk about it. Pastors don't struggle. We have it all together. Our families have it all together. And this is what we grew up believing. This is what we believed. And through trial, we had a miscarriage in our second trimester, and things happened in this world, and he just continued to get worse and worse. And he couldn't hide it anymore, and this depression started to show in physical form. He got really sick. He was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember when we first told our church that he had cancer, he got a standing ovation. We will stand with you. We will love you. We will be with your family. And at this point, Joe and Sailor were 4 months old. But that same week, it came out that he also had an addiction to opioids. The same week. And that next Sunday, we went in front of the church and told the church, and he was immediately let go. And the church that said they'd love us and support us the week before kicked us out of our home. No insurance. And we didn't understand what God was doing. We're like, wait, God, we have written a story. We followed your story, not what we thought. We didn't understand the suffering. We didn't understand what to do. We had no resources. And after a year of rehab and remission from his cancer, we went back into church ministry. And he said, you can minister to people as long as you don't tell your story. Don't tell anybody about the addiction. Don't tell anybody about the depression that you experience. And of course, we were like, okay, as long as we can love people and be in ministry again. But if you knew Eric, he still believed in people. He still wanted to do ministry, and he couldn't keep a secret to save his life. And so as he allowed God to use that in his life, the leadership found out, immediately lost his job. Again, our family's on the street. And at this time, our children are 1 year old. And it didn't take long after that. Without insurance, he had to stop his medication. And it was only a month after that, I saw him walk out the door and I never saw him again. And he had taken his life. And even though he knew the truth of who God was and God's love and God's forgiveness and redemption, he couldn't see it. And he lost hope and he gave up too soon. And his story was all for them. And we know a God that's bigger. We know a God that redeems these things. But we weren't talking about it. We weren't speaking truth into each other's lives. And after that, I remember, I felt so much shame. I didn't want to talk to anybody. And if I was going to talk to anybody, I was going to tell those churches a few things. I was like, I'm never going to church again. I love God, but I do not love church. I do not love the people in church. And God told me to write. which is ironic. Write your story, is what he told me about a week after he died. And I sat at that computer and I wrote and I posted it. And I closed my computer and I said, I'm done. I did it, God. I wrote it out. Went to bed. Broken. I was broken. Went to bed. Woke up the next morning, opened my computer. Thousands of shares on Facebook, Instagram, hundreds of messages from people. And I was like, what just happened? What just happened? God said, you told your story. Now watch what I can do. God didn't want him to take his life. God didn't want, his story was not over. And he made a choice to believe that it was, and to believe that this world would be better off without him. And it wasn't. It isn't. Even though God has redeemed so much, it isn't. But God used all this brokenness. And I can tell you story after story about how God has shown up. But we don't have that time. But God has shown up. But God created this ministry out of this horrid situation. And it's still a horrid situation. Like I see two beautiful children who have to live in the wake of sin and suffering. But they will know the love of Christ. They will know that he will always redeem these broken parts of our stories, a part of their story. And God will use our stories in ways that we don't even know. But we have to talk about it. We have to share about it. And I love, God gave me this word shortly after as I was writing, as I was talking to people. And I'll tell you, I did go back to church because I wanted my kids in church. People are messy. We're all messy. We're all sinful. But God has called us to be a part of a church family and to trust him. And I wanted my kids in church, and when they have thrived there, and he's slowly healed it through the years. But something that I always say is God redeems what he allows. God doesn't cause our suffering. He doesn't want our suffering. I don't think he enjoys watching it. I think it breaks him, his heart for us. But he redeems it, and he changes it, and he shifts it, and he says, watch me work. Because you think your life's over. But it's not. It's not. And I'm a living testimony of that. And I want to share just a verse that has gotten me through so much. And that's Lamentations 3, 22 through 24. And this is one that God showed me in college, like before all this happened. And it's become a theme in my life. And I want to share that with you. Oopsie. It says, because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail us. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. Therefore, I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. And a theme in my life, in my suffering, is the power of waiting and watching. Because it's not a question if he's going to work. He's going to work. He's going to work in our stories, no matter how ugly, how off course we think they went. He's going to work. But we must say every day that your mercies are new and great is your faithfulness. And because of that, I am going to wait. I'm going to be patient because I know you will follow through. I know you will show up. And it's in that waiting he molds and he shapes us and he writes this beautiful story that we don't even know is being written. And it's so cool for opportunities to share it today, because I can say 5 years, it's been 5 years since Eric died. I can say 5 years, God has worked. God has brought Cam into our lives, and I didn't know if I'd ever get married again. I didn't know what God was doing. God has brought a book that has helped countless people, Rob and Annie, into my life. So many things in that waiting. And I put down something we had talked about, that patience is the place between faith and hope. And it's not a place that is wasted. And that is a theme and something I hold on to, and I say that verse every single day, and God has brought ministry out of that. And what's cool is I'm going to pass off to Cam. Cam's going to share his story. I probably took a lot of time, sorry. And it's similar to mine, but it's so different as well. And so I'm going to pass it off, pass the ball to you, and have you share a little bit how God brought your story to mine.
Yeah, and so this is where we find ourselves, where, you know, if we were to walk with you guys and have conversations, we're going to find that you're coming from different places, too. This morning with the guys, we got to hang out. I got to sit down and hear a little bit about some folks. And this is the beauty of what God is doing, right? It's that he's given each and every one of us a unique thumbprint that he wants us to press into the world as a reflection of his beautiful collage that becomes the gospel. He didn't need us. He wants us. And I've had people say, like, man, like, why did God create us? And they're like, I think he had to. He was lonely. I would agree with the first part. I think he had to. But because the nature of God and the overflow of his heart is what we see in front of us right now. It's a broken heart that God is slowly mending. But he had to create, and he had to create us, and he had to create what was the reflection of who he is in the triune God, of perfect unity living out in this world. And he's not done with it. And so if you're sitting here and you're like, you know what? I'm giving up on that kid. I'm giving up on that spouse. I'm giving up on that friend. I'm not saying don't have healthy boundaries, but absolutely don't give up. That is the testimony of the gospel over and over, is that Jesus went, I see it, I know it, but I'm not done with it, because I'm not the God who just fixes the broken. I'm the God who raises the dead, and that's what I can do. There is no hopelessness within me, because I'm the God of hope. Faith, hope, and love is all that lasts. And let me tell you something, it will go on for eternity, because everything you see is what I created, and I will redeem it. And my story is not one necessarily of this, but it is one of a different kind of, if you will, waiting. And mine was more of a wondering. Because I didn't have examples, per se, in my life that were saying, Cam, this is the direction you're supposed to go. This is what you're supposed to do. This is how you read your Bible. Anybody ever been intimidated by this? Yeah. This sucker's scary. I mean, it's a lot of words. People are like, it's the inspiration of God. Who am I? I'm like, okay, cool. God's like, yeah, it's my inspiration, but this is my letter to you. And first and foremost, this is not a guidebook for life. This is a love letter for you. That every day you open it and you remind yourself how far I will go. And so for me, I was the kid with all the questions. And I didn't end up in ministry because I had this unique calling. It was because no one would answer them. And so it led me to seminary, where I'm like, I need to get answers, because this either matters or it doesn't. I'm either going to live my life for it or be done with it. And so I went to seminary and found a lot of answers to my questions. And it was a gift for me. And what I didn't realize was that I also was at the same seminary that Chrissy was. And as she was leaving, I was showing up. Only to figure out later on that our paths were about to come together again. And God was preparing us, because maybe we could have met in seminary and had this like epic life where we like went and did ministry together. But God was like, no, not yet. Got some work to do, and especially on you, Cam. I wasn't worthy, quite honestly. I wasn't ready. And what God was doing to me was, Cam, I need you to figure out what it looks like to not let other kids and other adults get in the same situation, which is yours, where these kids don't know how to read their Bible. They don't know how to have a relationship with Jesus. What is up there can't come down here, so the Lord's Prayer is null. And it's interesting to me that, like, this is what it's all about, most of the parables. Right? This is the kingdom of God. But if we can't access it, what hope do we have? And so for me, it started off with this search of, I've got so many questions, I don't know. And then mine turned into this ministry of God going, all right, now go start telling people. I'm like, I'm not ready. I'm not prepared. He's like, I'll show you as you go. Let's do this. Let's go, go, go. And I'm like, okay. And it wasn't like I just had green lights and some map that led me to the next place. It was a prayer that was given to me from my pastor as I walked into seminary, where he said, don't pray for a position, pray for godly men to walk into your life. And that's what I prayed for, and God showed me over and over and over again. And it led me into a beautiful place of ministry. But let me be very clear, that ministry started becoming more of a job than what it was meant to be, which was really living with people, loving people, ministering to people on God's behalf, right? And so my life became siloed. I had the church, I had my social life, never would the two collide. Well, I'm gonna give you a heads up, especially gentlemen in the room, that leads to problems, all right? I'm not gonna encourage you to have your social buddies that don't socialize with your church buddies, because usually if you don't want them to meet, there's a reason for that. And while I was, I will say, progressing in ministry, so was my soul shriveling like a raisin. And I was being productive with the programs, but absolutely empty in my soul. And then I introduced Thomas, my current senior pastor, who's just so good at loving people. And I'm like, well, that's different. 8 years ago. And it started to awaken something in me, and I started, okay, but I can't quite figure it out. And then God was like, all right, so here's the thing. I think you need to shift the prayer. Godly men are great, but I've got something else for you. And that's when Chrissy kind of walked into my world. And I thought that seminary was the end of training. Nope. I don't think so. It's where life really started to walk itself out. And in Luke, it's so interesting. You get Jesus' sermon that we all know, the Sermon on the Plain, Sermon on the Mount, some would call it. But basically, he preaches this beautiful sermon, and then the entire next chapter is him walking out the truths of that sermon. The sermon wasn't over yet. The sermon didn't end in that chapter. Now he's like, let me show you how this works. And all of a sudden, as I started to get to know Chrissy, I started realizing that, okay, God, this is how this whole thing works when you bring two people together. Is that she began to awaken in me because of her personality, and God had wired her and what she'd been through, where my heart began to beat again. Yeah, for her, but for other people. And she has a heart for people that is, honestly, I don't know how you dig a well that deep. Do you know? I mean, does anybody know some people like that? It's just like, it just, the love keeps coming. And it's like, where does that come from? I don't know. But that's where our stories then collide. And we start to see that it's not necessarily as much about my ministry. Is that working? My view. Having issues. Is it still coming through the microphone? Where our ministry started to collide. It wasn't so much about, oh, my ministry. This is where ministry gets unhealthy. And we start seeing churches built for the glorification of men. It's as though the Tower of Babel has entered the church. And God's like, stop building. You can't reach heaven like that. Heaven came to earth. Let's get it right, right? And all of a sudden, it was like in this collision, I realized again that, oh, as her heart was beating as a young child and wanting to see that again, so mine was too. And it was like this ministry God called us to wasn't the ministry of building a church, but building people up, building God's church, right? Loving people well. And it was like two trains colliding. Did you have something?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, our life, our focus was always on ministry on separate tracks, right? We have our ministry, we're doing ministry. We had to stop because the ministry needed to be in our home. God was working in our home. And we need to see that ministry first. God was doing ministry with us individually, with us together, with us and our children. And that was going on. And that's a ministry that was unknown territory for us. It was unknown. We didn't know. We're like, we have all the answers for other people, but us. But God was doing ministry in our home. And I think that's an important part just to add. It wasn't just church and counseling. It was ministry on us individually and us as a couple and us with two beautiful children who called him dad pretty much immediately. They longed for dad so much. They loved him. And that is God. And that is ministry work in our home. And I just didn't want to pass that up. Sorry. I didn't want to pass that up.
No, because it really speaks to the story. So one thing Rob had mentioned is we're getting ready for this. He's like, so I'm going to share with it was like, your life seems as though it was kind of like catching a moving train. It was this beautiful, and I'm like, and we wrestle with that. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. But it was more like God was taking Chrissy here, and she's on this track, and she's running after Jesus as best she can. And I'm here, and I'm on track. Have you all seen a train before? Okay, if you have a train on this track and a train on this track, what happens if they need to be on the same track? That's a collision. Right? And what we, I think, had in our mind was, here we go, just share the track. It was way messier than that. And as she was pursuing her, we started finding as the tracks came together and they started to merge, that there was alignment that we had that was awesome, and there was alignment that we had that was not awesome. And a big piece of that, too, was the alignment that we didn't have with the Lord. Because that's when all of a sudden we realized, perhaps we need to get off our track. Maybe God's like, hey, why don't you get on mine, and I'll sort out how the car thing works. Like, we'll figure this out. Because let's be very clear, we are both stubborn people. And there are moments where Chrissy's like, hey, guess what? You're getting on my track. And there's moments where I'm like, you're getting on my track. And this collision that started to happen, especially early on in marriage, it really, we always say the kids, we're like, how was that, Cam? Was the kids easy? Honestly, yeah. The kids were never really a problem. No. It's like, you know, Sayla had her moments to deal with that whole bathroom thing, but really, it wasn't that big a deal. But we were starting to figure out that even our greatest pursuits, we needed to align into a vision that we had as a couple and as a family, where we started to submit what was, what we thought this thing was, we had my track, and submit it to God's. And then take each other and go, you know what? I respect your track. And I love you. And I will not bump you off for the sake of my track. And that's where God's been like, Cam, I've got some humility I need to work with you, brother. And that's going to take some work.
Well, I'll just interject that I do as well. Mm-hmm. God's work, I mean, marriage is hard, relationships are hard, and life is messy, like we said, but it's worth it.
And so what we found is this, is as you invite God into this story, it's like the three-chord strand that you see in Ecclesiastes. You're kidding yourself if you think you're just going to do it on your own. So I don't think this just relates to couples, all right? I don't think this just relates to parents and kids. I think this relates to the single guy out there who's trying to figure it out as well. And if you're trying to prepare and you think maybe one day God has marriage for you in store, let's be clear. Like, you don't start to align yourself with God's track when you get married. As you submit yourself to that, you find that you're inviting something into your relationship that opens the door for the supernatural, for the heaven coming down to earth, that can take all the broken pieces that you've brought with you and that are in the back of that train with you, you know, and he can start to use them. And he can start to interject, you know, this is actually how forgiveness works. This isn't a theory. This is an extension that I'm giving you. Because the forgiveness that you're giving to each other and the forgiveness that you're trying to give to your past is not based on your capacity to forgive that day. It's based on your access to the storehouses of grace that God has for us. And all of a sudden, forgiveness is an extension of the grace of God, not a capacity of what I have today. That changes the story. I'm not trying to take over her track anymore. And she's not looking at me going, Cam, like, you're really a mess. You've got some problems here. You've got some arrogance. You've got some anger things you've got to work on. Yeah. You're right. Because we're inviting grace in. Again, that canvas for God to do his greatest work. There's this idea out there called the God of the gaps. And many of us, I think what we do is we find ourselves at a place where we know God has called us somewhere. And we're like, okay, God, you've called me here, but I can only do this. I look at my personality. I look at my abilities. I look at everything that I've been given, my resources and everything around me. And I can't get it. And it leads you to frustration. It leads you to depression. It could be a dream that you know God has put in your heart. And he's saying, exactly. Because in between here, God's going, this is me. I never wanted you to achieve that without me. I never wanted you to see yourself as full until you met me and you invited me in. And so that's now become a big part of our story, especially as we start hitting those carts together. We're trying to figure out our track together is to say, okay, God, where are you? What do you want?
Yeah, we're gonna close up a little bit, but as we close, and I know we're mixing our stories, telling you our separate ones, telling our story as we're figuring it out together, and you're probably thinking, what's my story? And oh, I've been through this, or I've experienced this, or whatever is going on in your mind and in your heart while we're sharing. We know that's going on. Each of us has our unique stories. Each of us comes in this place with our struggles and our pains and the why gods and what in the world are you doing and all this stuff. But as we were talking about God and how he mends the broken and how he takes our brokenness, and when we think we've messed up or when something derails our train and takes us off course and we don't know how to get back, and when things are taken from us and it hurts so bad, when these things happen, when these things break in front of us and we see them, we just want to remind you that God is the author. And we think, how in the world? How in the world will all these things make sense? How in the world will I ever heal from this? How in the world will I ever get to a place where I trust God again? And we reminded, I was telling him this story, and I want to end with this story. And it was a big part of our wedding as well, but I went to the Cayman Islands years ago, and I remember they just had a horrible hurricane. And all their homes, all their precious belongings, everything they loved materially had been gone. And it had been broken, and it was shattered everywhere, and these people were devastated. They had lost everything. Everything they had built, generations of family homes, family heirlooms, things that mattered to them. And they saw them in these pieces everywhere. Devastation. And questions, not understanding. And they decided to come together in the Grand Cayman Islands. First Baptist Grand Cayman said, bring your precious things here. And people started to bring all these things that they found from just the destruction of the hurricane. And they brought them to this church. And they started to put them together. Put them together. And all these broken pieces made a beautiful mural that still stands 10 years, 15 years later. And every day when the sun comes up, it shines through the cracks of all of these people's important things that matter to them. And it, when the sun came up, it shined through, and the moon shined through, and it reminded them that God restored. They thought they had lost everything, but God built it again, and they were part of that story, of God's greater story. And I love it so much. We did it at our wedding. We had all these broken pieces, and we put them on a little plaque, and it represents that God takes the things we don't understand, the hurts, the pains, the suffering, and he creates something beautiful. But we have to bring him those pieces. We have to remind that he is the author of our story, that he is the creator and the perfecter of our faith. It doesn't mean they don't exist. It doesn't mean that they are painful and destructive, but we have to bring them, and God will make something beautiful, and the sun will rise again, and his light will shine through, and it could be more beautiful than it was before. And that is the God that we serve, and that is the God that we believe in, and that is the God that we stay faithful to. And I want y'all to leave with that picture in mind.
And so a closing thought, and we'll pray and just close out tonight, is this. It's just, as you look at, maybe you're someone who watches the news too much. Okay? Maybe you're someone who's on Facebook streaming too much. I don't know where you sit today. You may be that optimistic person. You may not. It doesn't feel like the world's leaning optimistic these days. But what I do trust and know is this, is that God is not done with his work. Philippians 1 is so clear. He says, he who begins a good work in you will be faithful and complete it. He is not done. He's looking at each and every one of us with eyes that love. Not glares going, how dare you? Look at the gift you were given. He's saying, oh, child, we can work with that. Maybe tonight, especially if you got kids, have that moment to look at them with a little more endearment, to be the extension of God's grace in their life. Or if that's one person in your life that you know that there's a distance that's been created because of sin and brokenness, and God's going, no. Lean in. Reach out. Be my hands. Minister to them on God's behalf. I know, without a question of a doubt, that is my job as a broken vessel, to minister to Chrissy and to Joa and to Selah on God's behalf. And to do that for God's bride. But we got to start with the face of Jesus and ask, what does that face look like? When we come upon something that looks a little messed up, I just don't visualize Jesus walking up to the broken as he sat down having dinner with them going, whoa, you screwed up. No, he didn't preach a sermon at them. He sat with them, trusting that what he was going to do was sufficient. So you'll pray. Father, we thank you that you came to give us life and life abundantly. Lord, Satan comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And we know that he is good at his job. And we also know that often he doesn't have to do his job because we're so busy doing it for him. And so what I'm asking now is, especially in this church and in this town, in the hearts of those who come here, that Satan would be bound. And Lord, that your light would shine through again, that we would begin to see what are the broken pieces as something that you can use. And Lord, that you might deploy every person here with that message of hope. You're not done yet. God, I ask that you go with us now, that we walk with hope. God, that we would shine out with smiles on our faces. And Lord, that we would celebrate this victory that has already been won for your glory and our good. In your name I pray. Amen.
Thank you so much. So deep and rich. This is already so awesome. And tomorrow we're going to continue this theme, and tomorrow we're going to kind of get to the idea, okay, we don't judge who God is by the story, we judge the story by who God is. And so that's what we're going to have tomorrow. It's going to be great. Two sessions, one at 9, we're going to have some coffee and breakfast, and then 10:15. So we'd love to see all of you here again tomorrow. Here's what's happening tonight. We're going to take about 15 minutes. We're going to reset the stage for game night, add a few chairs in. I know some of you are not night owls, you're going home to sleep, and that's fine. If you've got kids in the back, you can go get them. They can be a part of the game night, too. And the way game night works is you don't have to stay the whole time. When you're done, you leave. We won't be offended. All right, we go until we're done. That's how it works. We've made some help. If you want to help Sherry back there, we might be able to remove some of that and put some chairs back there. But there's also some food, and you can eat that, too. So just show up. If you want to be here, great. If not, you're heading out. Make some space for other people that are coming in. Okay. Thanks for being here. We'll see you in the morning. 9 a.m. Don't forget, what time?
9 a.m.
Right at
17.
Right on, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. Guys, it was cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.